Eddie, the Collegiate Freshman. Chapter 7. The Resolution, Part 1. While the university track team was practicing every day, so was Eddie. Eddie, however, has been working out much harder than if he were working out with the team. Taking many trips to the future, Eddie trained on the beach, and when he returned, time did not elapse in his world. Eddie estimates that he got in far more training than he would have otherwise. Eddie has been training for a very specific reason. Eddie wants to run the 100-yard dash in the divisional competition, if only to prove a point. Eddie's point is that he will win, and does not need steroids to do it. The coaches are still hopeful that Eddie will return to the team. Knowing that he can walk back onto the team whenever he wants, Eddie is quite confident that he will be welcomed with open arms. But, to run in the divisional meet, Eddie has one condition. Eddie's demand is that Dean Grimsby watches the 100-yard dash, with a seat near the finish line. Eddie wants Dean Grimsby to have a front-row seat, so he can watch as Eddie wins the race. Considering the pressure Dean Grimsby has been under, the Dean would probably be glad to oblige. The week before the divisional competition, Kathy relays to Dr. Braun, it may be a day late and a dollar short, but Eddie said he'll run in the divisional meet if he's still on the team. But he doesn't even know if he's on the team. If he can't run, he said that's okay too. Dr. Braun replies, wow. We'd be glad to have him back. He's still on the team roster. Kathy, not wanting to appear too excited, asks, so, what should I tell him? Dr. Braun replies, tell him he's welcome to come to practice tomorrow. Lowering the boom, Kathy mentions, Eddie does, however, have one condition. Dr. Braun asks, what's that? Kathy replies, he wants Dean Grimsby at the divisional meet so he can watch when Eddie wins the 100-yard dash. Dr. Braun asks, he's that confident? Kathy replies, oh, yeah. He's been training. When Eddie says he'll win, he'll win. There's no question about it. Dr. Braun assures Kathy, the Dean will be there. I've spoken to the Provost about this entire situation. She will definitely make sure the Dean will be there for the meet. She attends every meet herself. The next day, Eddie shows up at practice. In the locker room, Eddie receives high fives, fist bumps, and hugs, as if he's already won some big event. Braden exclaims, our supreme as kicking team is back, fully intended to let McCutcheon and Leggett know they've been officially relegated back to their position of alternates and losers. McCutcheon and Leggett are both stressed and shaking, in fear that Eddie might, for some reason, decide to kick their ass at any moment. Eddie's presence is enough to throw the two losers off base. But, for now, Eddie ignores McCutcheon and Leggett. Adding stress to McCutcheon's already stressful day, Braden shows McCutcheon his medal depicting a hieroglyph image of a runner's ass, with a leg and foot kicking the ass. Braden tells McCutcheon, see this medal, Junior? Take a good look at it. In fear of disobeying Braden, McCutcheon takes a look at Braden's medal. Braden exclaims, I got this medal because I'm the chief ass kicker. Ain't no one ever given you a medal like this. And do you see that ass on my medal? That's your fat ass and that's Eddie's foot kicking your ass. McCutcheon is now more stressed than ever, whittled down to being both mentally and physically non-functional. In response to Braden's lecture, Leggett also becomes extremely stressed and starts shaking. After hearing Braden, Eddie kicks his foot into the air, high above his shoulder, suggesting that an ass kicking might be on the horizon. Mark, enjoying every bit of the entertainment, tells McCutcheon, wow. It sounds like you must have ticked someone off, Junior. I wonder who that could have been. McCutcheon does not answer Mark, for doing so will only lead to further stress. Everyone then heads out to the track, wondering what will happen during today's training session. With the divisional meet coming up this next weekend, Dr. Braun wants to see where Eddie stands in both the 100-yard dash and the 440-yard dash. The 440-yard dash time trial will be in the form of a 4x440 relay, which will also gauge the performance of the 4x440 relay team. Dr. Braun arranges a few time trials under the guise of wanting to know where the entire team stands before the meet. Eddie walks out to the track with Kathy and the rest of the tribe. Seeing that both McCutcheon and Leggett are going bald, Eddie asks Mark, "Prickly sea spiders?" Mark replies, "Yeah." Coach Herndon makes the call for the 100-yard dash time trial, announcing Bogenskaya, Svoboda, Braden, Hoffer, Leggett, and McCutcheon get behind the blocks. Kathy asks Paula, "Did she just call him McCutcheon?" Paula replies, "You heard that right." Kathy tells Paula, "At least we know where McCutcheon stands." Paula replies, "Yeah. He stands in dog shit on 2nd Street." Leggett and McCutcheon aspired to take Eddie's place. They will now find out whether they measure up. Coach Herndon moves toward the finish line, wanting a good view of the finish. Taking advantage of the slight delay, Mark comments to McCutcheon, "You really ought to see a doctor. It looks like you're in stage 3 of your prickly sea spider bite." McCutcheon tells Mark, "Shut up. I did see a doctor, and he said it's stress." Mark replies, "Yeah. Because of the prickly sea spider bite, you can't handle stress anymore. Your adrenal glands are all shriveled up." Hearing Mark taunting McCutcheon, Eddie strolls by McCutcheon, causing McCutcheon to suddenly jump back. Eddie whispers to McCutcheon, "Remember the Chucky." McCutcheon starts nervously shaking, prompting Mark to comment, "See that? Just look at you. You're a total basket case." Eddie stares at Leggett for 15 seconds, instilling great fear into him as well. The starter announces, "On your marks." Remembering when McCutcheon failed to run during a relay time trial handoff, Braden tells McCutcheon, "Don't forget to run when the gun goes off, Junior." Announcing, "Set," the starter is amused at the fun and games at the starting line. The starter fires the gun. Eddie takes off and shows everyone that he has not lost his competitive edge. McCutcheon, on the other hand, quickly assumes last place. What little competitive edge McCutcheon does have has, yet again, been dulled by Mark. Eddie quickly breaks away from the other runners. At 25 yards, Mark and Braden are right behind him. Hoffer, in the middle of the pack, is a few yards ahead of Leggett and McCutcheon. At 50 yards, Eddie is being chased down by Mark and Braden. As the three front runners approach the finish line, as to not slow down, Eddie visualizes the line 10 yards beyond where it actually is. Eddie wins the race, followed by Mark and Braden, who, as best as can be determined, tie. Hoffer follows in fourth place. McCutcheon and Leggett finish, but with non-competitive times. Knowing he had an awesome run, Eddie walks away. Not caring what his time is, Eddie is more interested in everyone else knowing how fast he ran. After the times are compiled, Coach Herndon is heard asking the timekeepers, "Are you sure?" There is some discussion among Coach Herndon and the timekeepers, but no one knows what all the talk is about. Dr. Braun comes over, joining in on the discussion. By now, Eddie is back at the starting line, talking with Kathy. After a review of the times, Coach Herndon gets ready to make the announcement. Seeing that she is ready, the runners gather around to hear their times. Coach Herndon exclaims, "Eddie Bogenskaya, a fantastic 9.1 seconds, prompting the team to cheer. Continuing, Coach Herndon announces, "Svoboda 9.3 seconds. Braden, 9.3 seconds. Hoffer, 9.5 seconds. Leggett, 12.3 seconds. And McCutcheon, 13.2 seconds, prompting Mark to laugh. Eddie, completely unaware of his time, is 100 yards away, still talking with Kathy. Mark yells to Eddie at the other end of the track, "Hey. You ran a 9.1. Hearing the news, Eddie gives Mark a thumbs up, acting as if the 9.1 second 100-yard dash was nothing special. Kathy gives Eddie a high five and a hug, telling him, "Awesome run. You're ready." Mark then turns toward McCutcheon and, even though McCutcheon is only 5 yards away, yells out, "And McCutcheon, you ran a 13.2. I ran faster than you just did when I was in the fourth grade." Mark just whittled McCutcheon down to the skill of a fourth grader. And Leggett, running a 12.3 second 100-yard dash, is not much better. It just goes to show what severe stress can do. After the other heats are completed, Dr. Braun announces, "I want my star 4x440 relay team on the track. Eddie, Mark, Johnson, and Braden, take lane 1, and you will run in that order. Leggett, McCutcheon, and Anderson, take lane 2. And you will run in that order." As everyone gathers around the starting line, McCutcheon asks Dr. Braun, "Who's our other runner?" Dr. Braun replies, "No one. Your team is only running 3/4 of a mile. The other team is running 1 mile. And you'd better hope for your sake that they don't beat you." Dr. Braun then tells the timekeepers, "Get me very accurate times on everyone's individual performance in lane 1, kind of indicating that the runners in lane 2 do not matter quite as much, or at all." Eddie is leading off, because Coach Braun wants Eddie's 440-yard performance from a standing start. The other runners have the benefit of already running when the clock starts timing their individual legs. Braden is assigned the anchor leg simply because Dr. Braun knows that Braden will not allow McCutcheon's team to win anything. Mark and McCutcheon are intentionally assigned the same leg for obvious reasons. Mark fully intends to show everyone how slow McCutcheon really is, and the coaches know this. And over the last year, Dr. Braun has developed a complete understanding of the interesting dynamics between the individual team members. Braden starts exclaiming, "We're gonna kick their ass. And there's only 3 of them. That makes them a little more than a half-ass team. Let's get this show on the road." During Braden's rant, Mark tells McCutcheon, "Remember, your tendons are weak." Now that McCutcheon is bald again, Eddie mentions to Mark, "Yeah. But his empty aerodynamic head will make up for it." Eddie then turns to Leggett, who is now also bald, and asks, "And what's up with your head, you dumb lug nut?" Leggett does not respond to Eddie, so Mark answers for Leggett, telling Eddie, "It's up his fat ass, just like McCutcheon's." By inducing some stress into their competitors, Mark and Eddie just added 10 seconds to McCutcheon's and Leggett's runs. It's no secret that Mark is seriously trying to get rid of McCutcheon and Leggett. The starter announces, "On your marks." As he is positioning himself in the blocks, Eddie looks over at Leggett and reminds him, "Remember the Chucky," adding a few more seconds to Leggett's run. The starter announces, "Set." The gun is fired, and Eddie explodes out of the blocks, clearly out to prove himself once again. Leggett, however, takes slightly shorter forever to get to his relatively deficient top speed. While Eddie is running, Paula tells Kathy, "I never expected to see Eddie on the track again." Kathy explains to Paula, "Eddie just wants to prove something to Dean Grimsby." Paula asks, "What's that?" Kathy replies that you don't need steroids to win. Kathy and Paula watch as Eddie hands off to Mark. As Mark is running, Paula counts the seconds between Eddie's handoff and Leggett's handoff. Paula tells Kathy, "They are about 18 seconds ahead." Kathy asks, "How do you know?" Paula tells her, "I counted the seconds." Kathy comments, "Oh yeah. Duh." During Mark's leg, he makes McCutcheon look as bad as possible. Paula points out to Kathy, "Look at Mark. He's creaming McCutcheon." Kathy adds, "Yeah, because McCutcheon's tendons are weak." It is clear that Mark widened the lead significantly as he approaches the transition zone. Mark hands off to Johnson, as McCutcheon is very far behind. Paula and Kathy both are counting the seconds between the two teams, concluding that the tribe is really kicking ass. Now about 40 seconds ahead according to Paula's estimate, Johnson is the next in line to make McCutcheon look bad. While Johnson is widening the lead, Braden tells Anderson, "I'm sure glad I'm not in your shoes. Those guys left you all the work to do." McCutcheon hands off to Anderson, which does not go smoothly. As Johnson approaches the transition zone, Kathy exclaims, "They might just do it." A few seconds after Anderson receives his baton, Braden receives his. Braden takes off, knowing that he can pass Anderson. But Braden wants more, and is out to get it. As Braden would put it, the ass-kicking of the day would be beating Anderson to the finish line. Braden chases down Anderson, destined to put McCutcheon and Leggett in their place. As they approach the finish, Braden passes Anderson, crossing the finish line 7/10 of a second ahead of Anderson. After the times have been compiled, Coach Herndon announces, "The composite time of the winning team was 3 minutes, 2.3 seconds. That would be an average of 45.6 seconds per leg. The approximate individual split times are Edward Boganskaya, 45.8 seconds. Mark Svoboda, 45.3 seconds. Eric Johnson, 46.1 seconds. Axel Braden, 45.1 seconds. Congratulations. That was a very good run." The winning 4x440 relay team exchange high fives, celebrating their victory. Coach Herndon then announces, "The composite time of the losing team is 3 minutes, 3 seconds. And, I remind you, you only ran 3/4 of a mile. Three of the distance men on this team could have outpaced you. The approximate individual split times are McCutcheon, 66.3 seconds. Leggett, 62.2 seconds. Anderson, 54.5 seconds. Apparently, Eddie's and Mark's psychological warfare helped them to win the race, even with the odds stacked against their relay team. Hearing the news, Braden starts chanting. Java says, "Build a bigger muscle." Java says, "Make it big and strong." Java says, "Build a bigger muscle." Java says, "You gotta build a bigger muscle and make it big and strong." Java says, "McCutcheon is an asshole." Java says, "Leggett's weak as shit." Java says, "McCutcheon is a loser." Java says, "McCutcheon is an asshole and Leggett is a prick." Once Braden comes back to Earth, he again exchanges high fives with Eddie, Mark, and Johnson, who are continuing to celebrate. Referring to Braden's chant, Mark asks Braden, "Yo bro, what was that all about?" Braden replies, "I don't know. I was just thinking back when we saw McCutcheon and Leggett in the gym last year, and McCutcheon dumped the bar when he was doing his squats. I don't know. I just made it up." Mark tells Braden, "That was kind of funny." Kathy and Paula cheer, enjoying the moment because the team is back together again. With not much more to do during today's training session, Eddie catches up with the tribe on what he has missed over the last few weeks, as the coaching staff evaluates the other runners. After the practice session, the tribe's energy is off the charts compared with the last few weeks. Dr. Braun is confident that, going into the divisional meet, the team stands a good chance of dominating the show. Coach Herndon is glad to have Eddie back, and quickly relegates McCutcheon back to being an alternate. McCutcheon and Leggett are not happy at all, but they'll have to deal with it. If McCutcheon and Leggett try to pull a stunt like what they did with Eddie's or Mark's locker again, they'll likely not make it to the other side in one piece. With a little extra time on his hands, Eddie just about has John's June buggy finished. John put in a lot of work himself, moving the project along a little faster than usual. The weekend before the divisional meet, Eddie calls John and tells him to run to Angelo's service station, which is only a mile away. Eddie explains that he will do the wheel alignment and John can drive it home. Eddie could have picked up John in the June buggy, but John could be ready in 10 minutes or in an hour. John, showing a bit of excitement, arrives at the service station a little earlier than Eddie. Eddie drives up in John's dune buggy, marking the first time John has ever seen it on the road. Eddie opens the station and drives into the alignment bay. He asks John, "So, what do you think?" John replies, "It looks awesome." Eddie then asks, "Well, are you ready to learn something?" John replies, "Sure. I'm game." John's dune buggy is comparably equipped to the others that Eddie has built, but John's has additional lighting, which John installed himself, added to the roll bar. John's dune buggy, also like the others, has a two-way radio and a trailer hitch complete with a toolbox trunk. Eddie explains to John, "Since we built it, there are no factory specs for the alignment. I'll start with the specs on Kathy's dune buggy." As Eddie begins the alignment, he asks John, "So, how has the school part of high school been without Mr. Crumb?" John replies, "No one's heard a peep out of Mr. Shapiro yet. Mr. Fraser and Mr. Zunday seem to be happy about it." Eddie comments, "I wonder if they miss messing with Mr. Crumb." John suggests, "I doubt it. All the other coaches seem to be happy about Crumb being gone too." Mr. Shapiro, who was the assistant principal, has been appointed to the position of interim principal. Mr. Shapiro, who wants the position permanently, has clearly been on his best behavior. As they are talking, Eddie shows John how an alignment is done, which John seems to understand. Once he has the alignment set, he tells John, "Go ahead and sit in the driver's seat." Eddie rechecks the camber angle, which naturally changes slightly when John sits in the seat. Eddie tells John, "The alignment looks good, so let me take it for a road test." Eddie drives John's dune buggy up the street alone and, in 5 minutes, returns to the station. When he returns, Eddie tells John, "Okay, I think we're ready to go." Eddie closes the station and tosses John the keys. John gets behind the wheel and carefully drives out of the station. John has driven Kathy's dune buggy once to see if he really wanted one. John drives Eddie home, quickly getting the hang of driving his new toy. On the way, John casually mentions to Eddie, "Anne is really going to like this." Eddie asks, "Oh, yeah. Who's Anne?" John replies, "She's my girlfriend." Eddie asks, "When did she come along?" John explains, "About 4 weeks ago. I've known her for years. She runs distance. We were all sitting on the lawn at school one day at lunch, and she decided to sit on my lap." Eddie laughs and tells John, "Now, I know why you wanted the dune buggy as fast as you can get it." Eddie and John arrive at Eddie's house, where Eddie asks, "So, are you headed home or to Anne's house?" John replies, "I wasn't thinking about stopping by Anne's house. But thanks for the idea." Eddie reminds John to get the oil changed in about 3,000 miles. John heads out to Anne's house, and Eddie heads inside to give Kathy the news of John's new girlfriend. The day of the divisional meet arrives, and Eddie is more ready than ever. Since the weather is nice, Kathy and Eddie decide to take Kathy's dune buggy to the meet. Kathy gets behind the wheel, and Eddie turns on the two-way radio. Switching to the tribe's special channel, Eddie transmits KDB to the tribe, which means Kathy's dune buggy calling any tribe member. Surprisingly, Mark replies over the radio, "Yo, bro. This is PDB, referring to Paula's dune buggy." Eddie asks, "Are you guys headed to the meet right now?" Mark replies, "Yeah. We're just leaving." Hearing a weak signal in the background, they hear, "Yo, guys. This is the shot, Doc. Me and Erica are headed that way." On the way, they all have a refreshing and encouraging conversation about today's meet, also giving Eddie the reassurance that installing the two-way radios were worth the effort. Eddie and Kathy meet up with Mark and Paula at the university stadium, parking their dune buggies together in the usual tribal location. They head into the locker room together, meeting up with the other team members. Eddie, being a freshman and not too familiar with the protocol, asks Johnson, "Where do the other teams change?" Johnson replies, "They use the locker room in the main gym, but a lot of them come dressed for the meet." Once the tribe is all present, they head to the indoor arena to join the rest of the team for a short meeting with the coaching staff before they walk out to the stadium. Addressing his team, Dr. Braun announces, "Today, we walk out there confidently, knowing that we again have the potential to dominate today's meet, as we proved over the indoor season. But I don't want anyone to let their guard down. You can be sure that the other teams have been training as hard, if not harder, than we have. But we have been training smarter." Dr. Braun reminds the team, "If you have your spikes, leave them here. Today, if you remember, we will be running on the new all-weather track. This means that the finish line and the starting line are not in the same place. Even though the track is now a metric track, we will be running our usual events. Also, the relay transition zones are very well marked. Pay very close attention to them, because you can be sure the lane judges will be." Dr. Braun continues for a while, making the usual announcements, then announces, "As you already know, a change has been made in the way you will be timed. Today, the timekeepers will not be using stopwatches. You will all be timed electronically. The times reported today will be to the 100th of a second and will be highly accurate. Be warned, however, that there are sensors in the starting blocks that will detect any false start. So, do not try to anticipate the gun. You will be caught." This is all news to Eddie, who has not been around for a while. Kathy whispers to Mark, "The electronic timers measure metric time to match the new metric track." Mark, who fell for Kathy's metric time story in high school, laughs and replies, "I ain't falling for that one again." Kathy explains, "Really, it is. You heard him. They are timing us to the 100th of a second. That's the metric system." Mark thinks about what Kathy said for a moment, but Paula, laughing under her breath, gives it all away. Mark then whispers to Kathy, "You need new running shoes." Kathy replies, "How is that?" Mark tells her, "You need metric running shoes to run on a metric track. That's why Europeans have different shoe sizes." Kathy laughs, not falling for any of Mark's logic, or lack of it, today. Dr. Braun then makes a special announcement. "There has been a lot of controversy surrounding this team in the last few months. Today, Dean Addison Grimsby, Provost Athena Layton, President Joseph Caldwell, the Admissions Director, Mr. Gerald Rosenberg, and our Athletic Director, Dr. Alexander Karakova, along with a few other administrators, will be seated in the stands near the finish line. Today, we are going to demonstrate to them what track and field is. Some of these administrators play a big part in approving your scholarship money every year. Today, your job is to prove to them that you are worth more than they spend." The team cheers and is more than ready for the meet. They head out to the stadium, ready to give it their best. Eddie is more fired up than ever. As he is walking out to the track, Eddie figuratively looks at his only competition, the clock, which is part of the new informational scoreboard at the end of the track. Standing around the team bench, Eddie, Mark, and Hoffa stretch and warm up, knowing that the 100-yard dash will be one of the first events to be called. Kathy and Paula, also stretching, are up in the women's 100-yard dash right after the men. The call comes for the preliminary heats of the 100-yard dash, and Eddie, Mark, and Hoffa make their way to the starting line. Also walking to the starting line is Major Nacklo Brocklin, who was handed a severe and unexpected blow by Eddie and Mark over the indoor season. Eddie and Mark are in the first heat, along with Nacklo Brocklin and a few other highly seeded runners. Eddie and Mark do not appear worried. Nacklo Brocklin, however, appears more stressed than ever. Nacklo Brocklin clearly remembers Mark from the indoor season. While waiting behind the blocks, Nacklo Brocklin is quick to inform Mark, "This time, I'm winning." Turning to Eddie, Mark tells him, he said he's going to win. Eddie laughs and replies, no, he's not. Not in this universe. Mark calmly relays to Nacla Brocklin, Eddie said you're not going to win. Getting a little hot under the collar, Nacla Brocklin tells Mark, we'll just see about that. Mark, pointing to his gluteal region, reminds Nacla Brocklin, the only thing you'll be seeing about is watching my ass when it crosses the finish line ahead of yours. Nacla Brocklin, who seems a bit emotionally unstable at the moment, is now ticked off. That is not exactly where anyone wants to be immediately before a race. In a heated rage, Nacla Brocklin boldly informs Mark, 2 years ago, I won the national title in the 100-yard dash. And I've been training. Mark, thinking about what Nacla Brocklin said, replies, oh, really? So, you're the guy who ran the 9.5 2 years ago at nationals. Nacla Brocklin replies, that's me. Major Nacla Brocklin. Mark replies, wow. That's when I was a senior. I ran a 9.3 back then. Eddie ran a 9.2. We didn't go to nationals because it was a total waste of time. There was no competition. Nacla Brocklin yells out, what do you mean there was no competition? I was there. What are you talking about? As the runners are told to get ready, Mark informs Nacla Brocklin, Eddie broke the national record, and I tied it. That kind of trumps your little national title. Nacla Brocklin, shoved a few rungs down on the ladder by Mark, is no longer emotionally ready to run. The starter announces, on your marks, then announces, set. The gun is fired, and the runners are off. Eddie and Mark, taking the lead early in the race, know that Nacla Brocklin is chasing them down. Eddie and Mark, however, know they will make the final. Running side by side with Mark, Eddie is aiming for a tie, only to see how accurate the new electronic timing equipment is. At the finish line, Eddie and Mark appear to tie. Nacla Brocklin, not delivering on his promise, comes in third place. Nacla Brocklin has made the final, but realizes he will have to do a lot more work if he is to win anything during this meet. After the race, Eddie and Mark look up at the scoreboard, immediately seeing their times. Eddie, in lane 4, ran the race in 9.26 seconds. Mark, in lane 5, ran it in 9.31 seconds. Nacla Brocklin, not quite as fast as Eddie or Mark, delivered a time of 9.49 seconds, slightly faster than he ran 2 years ago, which is on par with Hoffa's best times. Eddie asks Mark, did you run your fastest? Mark replies, not exactly. I kind of slacked off at the very end. Eddie tells Mark, I tried to tie with you. I wanted to see how good the electronic timers are. Mark, referring to Nacla Brocklin, comments, well, knock your block off ran a 9.49, and he also came in third place in the 40 during the indoor season. Eddie and Mark sit back on the bench, watching the times delivered in the other heats as they are posted on the scoreboard. A few respectable times are delivered, but none match the performance of Eddie and Mark. The added benefit of electronically timed races is that the runners immediately know where they stand. The runners also know exactly what they will be up against in the final. Seeing the times that were delivered by the other runners, Eddie is more confident than ever that he will win the event. After the preliminary heats of the men's 100-yard dash are finished, the women are up next in that event. At the starting line, Kathy and Paula again meet Adriana, who came in third place in the 40-yard dash over the indoor track season. Unlike Liz Duncan, also known as the Ice Princess as Kathy named her last year, Adriana is very friendly toward her competitors. Kathy tells Adriana, hey, it's good to see you again. Adriana, who is now a senior, replies, I remember you guys. It's good to see you too. Remembering how happy she was when she got third place last year, Adriana tells Kathy, I really hope I do well today. Kathy tells Adriana, just make it to the final. That's all that matters right now. You'll do well. Adriana, quite the antithesis of Liz Duncan, wishes Kathy and Paula good luck to you guys. The runners get behind the blocks, waiting for the event to begin. Once the other heats are lined up and ready to go when called, the starter announces, "On your marks," followed by "Set," as the runners assume the set position. The gun is fired and Kathy and Paula, as they are leaving the blocks, both let out their primal scream heard throughout the stadium. Within a few yards, Kathy and Paula are in the lead, with Adriana right behind them. At 50 yards, Kathy pulls slightly ahead of Paula. At the finish line, Kathy crosses first, followed by Paula. Adriana finishes right behind Paula, with all three runners guaranteed a place in the final. Kathy gives her teammate, Paula, a victory hug, followed by Kathy and Paula giving Adriana a victory hug. Adriana tells Kathy and Paula, "Wow. I wish my team would treat me this nice." Looking up at the scoreboard, Kathy tells Paula and Adriana, "We're all in the final." Adriana asks, "How do you know?" Pointing at the scoreboard, Kathy replies, "With those times, trust me, girl, we're all in the final." Adriana confides, "When I get back to my bench, they are going to tell me, you're going to have to do better than that." Paula tells Adriana, "Just run your best. That's all you can do." On the way back to the bench, Kathy tells Paula, "You know, I really wish Adriana was on our team." Paula replies, "Yeah, I know." Later in the morning, the call is made for the men's 440-yard dash, which Braden has been waiting for all morning. Braden exclaims, "Here we go. It's going down." Braden stands up and, along with Johnson, heads to the starting line. Leggett, who Coach Herndon allowed to run this race, follows, but keeps his distance. Braden's energy and excitement cannot be contained. Leggett's enthusiasm, however, cannot be found. Braden walks to the starting line with a well-choreographed dance, exclaiming on the way, "Gonna kick an ass, and land it in the grass. This race is all mine, and I am gonna shine." Braden, in the first heat, gets behind the blocks, dancing and exclaiming, "Let's get this ass kicking over with." Leggett, standing over to the side waiting for his heat, looks away, having heard enough from Braden over the last year. The starter announces, "This is the 440-yard dash, and it sounds like we already have a winner." Braden exclaims, "And that would be me. I'm gonna be the winner." "No, wait. Did I really say that? There must be something wrong with me today. How did I make that mistake? What I meant to say was, I am the winner." The starter smiles and announces, "Good luck to all of you. On your marks." The starter, wondering if Braden will deliver on his promise, then announces, "Set." The gun is fired and the great ass kicking of the day is underway. Braden quickly claims the lead, with a few runners attempting to keep up. After 110 yards, or one quarter way around the track, Braden has lost all of his competition, except for Johnson. At the 220-yard mark, at the bench, Coach Herndon exclaims, "That was a 21.9 split." As Braden approaches the finish line, many of the coaches and officials know exactly what they are witnessing. Braden crosses the finish line, delivering 440 yards in 44.93 seconds. Johnson follows, with a time of 46.94 seconds. Dr. Braun looks at Coach Herndon and is at a loss for words. Looking at the scoreboard, Braden immediately sees his winning time. Braden, who is not at a loss for words, points to his chest, exclaiming, "Everybody step aside, 'cause you can't beat my stride. I am the greatest ass kicker of all time. There ain't no ass kicker alive that's better than me." There is no longer any question about Braden's claim. Braden just delivered a 440-yard dash performance that is a qualifying time for the Olympics in the 400-meter dash. Braden heads back to the bench, knowing that he, once again, won the event he's owned for the last 8 years. In the stands, the president of the university, President Caldwell, asks the group sitting with him, "When did we pick him up?" Dean Grimsby, wanting to sound knowledgeable, replies, "I think we picked him up this year." Mr. Rosenberg, the director of admissions, clarifies, "Axel Braden is a freshman, and he's also one of our campus police officers. He graduated from the police academy last year, and he is now in our criminal justice program." President Caldwell replies, "I feel a lot safer already." Provost Layton informs President Caldwell, "If I am not mistaken, he just set a divisional record." President Caldwell replies, "He sounded very confident that he would win. I'd certainly agree that his abilities are congruent with his confidence." Right before lunch, the call is made for the 100-yard dash final. Eddie and Mark, highly encouraged by Braden's enthusiasm, head to the starting line. In the stands, Mr. Rosenberg tells President Caldwell, "Our two guys in the final are Eddie Boganskaya and Mark Svoboda. We picked them up this year too. Eddie is expected to win this race. Mark is expected to come in second." Provost Layton comments, "This is the race I've been waiting for all day. I'm sure you have as well, Dean Grimsby. Haven't you?" Dean Grimsby replies, "Yes, yes. For sure." Truth be told, Dean Grimsby could not care less about the race. He would rather be home cutting his lawn right now. In the final, Eddie and Mark are again up against Major Nacklo Brocklin. At the starting line, knowing that he has met his match, Nacklo Brocklin is unusually quiet. Catching Nacklo Brocklin's eye, Mark points to his ass, implying that Nacklo Brocklin will have a good view of it during the race. With the finalists behind the blocks, the coaches staring at the starting line, and the administrators at the edge of their seats, the big sprinting event of the day is about to begin. The starter announces, "This is the final for the 100-yard dash. Good luck to all of you. On your marks." The eight finalists get themselves positioned in the blocks. The starter announces, "Set." Without delay, the gun is fired, and the runners are off. Eddie and Mark are in the lead right out of the blocks. After 25 yards, Eddie and Mark break away, leaving Nacklo Brocklin with a good view of Mark's ass. At 50 yards, Eddie breaks away from Mark, taking a very clear lead. At the finish line, Eddie wins the gold medal, and Mark wins the silver medal. Nacklo Brocklin wins the bronze medal, wondering where the two guys who keep beating him came from. Everyone in the stadium cheers and applauds, seeing the times on the scoreboard. Hearing the cheering, Eddie looks up to see his time, and, throwing his fist into the air, yells out, "Yes." Eddie's time of 9.11 seconds represents the best official run of his life. Mark's time of 9.17 seconds also represents his personal best. Eddie and Mark exchange high fives and fist bumps. Nacklo Brocklin is amazed that his personal best time of 9.43 seconds only affords him a bronze medal. At the finish, it is clear that the rest of the spread-out pack never stood a chance at placing in this race. In the stands, Provost Layton comments to the other administrators, "I can't even express how pleased I am that Edward is back on our team." President Caldwell, not well versed in track, asks anyone, "Exactly how good were their times anyway?" Provost Layton, who apparently knows a thing or two, answers, "I'm sure Edward just set a divisional record, especially since his run was very close to the world record. Edward's and Mark's times today would certainly qualify them for the Olympics. Wouldn't you agree, Dean Grimsby?" Caught in the middle of a daydream, Dean Grimsby, who must reply since he was addressed, answers, "Yes, yes. I certainly agree." Provost Layton is clearly not happy with Dean Grimsby for some reason. As Eddie and Mark return to the team bench, they see Coach Herndon, who rarely shows emotion, exclaiming, "Did everyone see that? I can't believe what I just saw." Eddie and Mark are greeted by high fives, fist bumps, and hugs. Kathy jumps up onto Eddie's hips, prompting Paula to jump up on Mark's hips. Kathy tells Eddie, "You did it. You won." Eddie replies, "One down, five to go." The celebration continues for a while until the women get called for their final in the 100-yard dash. Now that the men's 100-yard dash final is over, the last call is made for the women's 100-yard dash final. It's now Kathy's and Paula's turn to show everyone what they have. With eight finalists in the race, Kathy, Paula, and Adriana are the three women expected to place in the final. Adriana asks Kathy and Paula, "Does that scream thing you guys do really help?" Kathy replies, "I don't know. I just do it naturally. Try it and see." Paula adds, "Eddie calls it the Amazon war cry." Kathy then mentions to Adriana, "The least it will do is to scare the crap out of the person next to you." Adriana smiles and tells them, "I'm going to try it and see." With the race about to begin, the women wish each other good luck, which is quite a departure from 2 years ago. The starter announces, "This is the final for the women's 100-yard dash. Good luck to every one of you. On your marks." Eddie and Mark are watching closely, as are the coaches. The word, set, quiets the stadium, with the crowd wondering if they'll see a performance comparable to the men's final. The gun is fired, and three Amazon war cries announce the competition has begun. At 25 yards, Kathy is in the lead, but Paula has some competition. Adriana is right there next to her. Adriana is totally convinced the Amazon war cry gave her a bit of an edge. At 50 yards, Paula closes in on Kathy's lead and pulls ahead of Adriana. This race is now serious business. With Paula on her heels, Kathy gives it all she has. Paula, not willing to let Adriana take second place, pours on the power. Adriana, in her last 100-yard dash, wants to go out with the best time of her life. At the finish line, Kathy takes first place, and Paula takes second place. With the best run of her life, Adriana takes third place. At the finish line, Kathy, Paula, and Adriana all exchange high fives and victory hugs. Kathy, who seems to have everyone's statistics in their head, tells Adriana, "By the way, you just beat Liz Duncan's best time." Adriana gives Kathy another high five, telling her, "Wow. You just made my day." Looking up at the scoreboard, Kathy's time comes in at 10.51 seconds, setting a divisional record. Paula's time is 10.67 seconds, which would have set a divisional record if Kathy were not in the race. And Adriana, with an awesome run, clocked in at 10.75 seconds. On the way to the benches, the winners exchange hugs again, congratulating each other for their awesome run. Over at the expensive seats, not that anyone really paid to sit in them, Provost Layton tells Dr. Karakova, "Kathy is a really good asset to our team. I'm sure you are very proud of her." Dr. Karakova replies, "I am. She put a lot of work into getting this far. It's just too bad that she and Eddie won't be back next year." Shocked at Dr. Karakova's comment, Provost Layton replies, "Really? Why not? Is there a problem?" Knowing exactly where he was going with his comment, Dr. Karakova tells Provost Layton, "I'm sure Dean Grimsby could explain the reasons surrounding their decision much better than any of us." Dr. Karakova's carefully worded comment was certainly the last thing Dean Grimsby wanted to hear today. Except for, perhaps, Provost Layton, who now officially informs the Dean, telling him, "Dean Grimsby, I would like to hear from you personally the explanation of why Kathy and Edward will not be back next year. Please clear your calendar for Monday morning. We will start promptly at 9 a.m. in my office." Dean Grimsby, armed with the fact that he fully exonerated Eddie, replies, "I'll be there." Dean Grimsby had previously assured Provost Layton that Eddie was back on the team, only to find out otherwise. Provost Layton is quite confused with the conflicting information she has received regarding Eddie's continued participation on the team. Hearing that Kathy will not be back next year now raises a red flag. If anyone is sending mixed signals, it is Dean Grimsby. Eddie agreed to run in today's meet only to prove a point. That point was that you do not need to take steroids in order to win. Eddie never said that he would return next year. Neither did Kathy. Dean Grimsby, agreeing to the meeting with Provost Layton on Monday morning, had little or no choice. When they returned to the bench, everyone gives Kathy and Paula a high five and a generous supply of hugs. Coach Herndon, displaying abundant energy herself, gives Kathy and Paula a high five. Eddie gives Kathy a special congratulation, then tells her, "Now that you guys are done, we can all finally get some lunch." Kathy replies, "Hey, now. I got here as fast as I can, in 10.51 seconds. Mark comments, "If there was pizza at the finish line, she would have run a lot faster." Kathy smiles and simply replies, "Hey, now." Now with a 45-minute break, the tribe heads to the cafeteria for a light lunch. Mitchell and Akinmola, who will be running the mile shortly, join them, but they have already had their lunch. After lunch, the call is made for the men's 1-mile run. Today, it's a toss-up whether Mitchell or Stone will win. Akinmola might even take this race, but he has not yet broken a 4-minute mile. Mitchell has formulated a plan by where he, Stone, and Akinmola might be able to improve their times. So, for this race, Mitchell, Stone, and Akinmola have come to a strategical agreement. With Mitchell's plan, the goal for the team is to take first, second, and third place in the event. Whether Mitchell's plan works or not remains to be seen. At the starting line, Mitchell spots a guy wearing number 194, who presented a bit of a problem over the indoor season. Referring to number 194, Mitchell tells Stone and Akinmola, "We all have to break out ahead of that guy wearing number 194. Stone, who has been around for a while, comments, "The good news is I don't see anyone else who might pose a threat." Stone tells Akinmola, "See what you can do to block him." The runners are positioned, with Mitchell, the number one seed, assigned to the inside position. Next to Mitchell is Stone. And next to Stone is Akinmola. Number 194, the fourth seed, is next to Akinmola, whom Akinmola will try his best to block. The starter announces, "Set." The gun is fired, and Mitchell, Stone, and Akinmola sprint the first 50 yards. As soon as Mitchell takes the lead, Stone and Akinmola synchronously drop in right behind him. Number 194 is in fourth place and seems to be content with that position for now. At exactly 220 yards into the race, Mitchell steps out, immediately followed by Stone and Akinmola sprinting ahead of him. Mitchell, however, does not drop his pace, but the planned strategy requires that Stone and Akinmola step up their pace. Mitchell drops into third place, with Stone now taking the lead. At the 440-yard mark, Stone steps out, followed by Akinmola and Mitchell sprinting to take the first and second place position. Stone drops into third place, and the group is now led by Akinmola. By rotating the lead, each runner gains the benefit of drafting. The three teammates continue the same procedure for 3/4 of a mile. At the 3/4 mile mark, by prior agreement, the three distant stars are now on their own. By Mitchell's own design, he is now in the lead, right where he wanted to be all along. With the initial position of Mitchell, Stone, Akinmola, shifting positions every 220 yards would put Mitchell in the lead at the 3/4 mile mark. Calculating this in advance, Mitchell virtually assured himself a victory. But, with 440 yards to go, and less than a yard or two between any of the three front runners, it's still technically anyone's race. With a lot of energy remaining, Mitchell runs the last 440 yards as if it were a 440-yard dash. Knowing that he will not be caught, Mitchell maintains the lead. Akinmola and Stone battle it out for second place, something Mitchell knew would happen well ahead of time. With a fight to the finish, the spectators all stand to get a good view as the contenders approach the finish line. Mitchell crosses the finish line with a time of 3:54.51. Akinmola takes second place with a time of 3:59.87. Stone, finishing right behind Akinmola, delivers a time of 3:59.98. Mitchell knew all along that he would win this race. During practice, Mitchell has been closely observing Stone and Akinmola. For weeks, they have all been practicing drafting off of each other. During the interval training drill, Mitchell discovered that, if pushed too hard in the beginning of the race, Stone will not run as good as usual. Mitchell has also discovered that Akinmola, being the tallest member of the distance team, has a greater frontal body surface area. Taking what he learned in Miss Amherst's physics class, Mitchell surmised that Akinmola would certainly benefit greatly from drafting. Mitchell has also surmised that, because of Akinmola's greater frontal body surface area, Mitchell would benefit the most by following Akinmola versus following Stone. Today, Mitchell's analysis was proved correct. Oddly, Stone and Akinmola did not figure out that Mitchell's plan was designed to give Mitchell the best possible outcome for this race. But either way, the university team placed first, second, and third in the event, and that's all that matters. Immediately after the mile, the call is made for the men's mile medley relay. Eddie, Mark, Braden, and Johnson, in the first heat, head to the starting line. McCutcheon, who previously ran in this race, looks at the mile medley relay team with contempt. Disgusted with the way the meet is going, McCutcheon stands up and goes for a walk. Leggett stands up and goes with him. Losing the 440-yard dash earlier today, Leggett's track career has come to a close. As long as the tribe is around, McCutcheon's track career is essentially over as well. Mark and the other lead-off men get on the track. Up against Nakla Brocklin again, Mark has assumed the lead-off position. The starter gets the runners ready and set and fires the gun. The runners are out of the blocks, all off to a good start. Back at the expensive seats, Dr. Karakova mentions, "This is our star relay team. They've never lost a race." Dean Grimsby asks, "Never?" That's probably exaggerating a little. Putting the dean in his place, Dr. Karakova explains, "Actually, it's no exaggeration at all. This relay team has been running together since middle school. And they've never lost a relay race for as long as they have been running together." As Mark is about to hand off to Eddie, Dr. Karakova tells the other administrators, "Watch their handoff and compare it with the other team's handoffs. You'll see one of the reasons they are so good." Eddie receives the baton from Mark, prompting Provost Layton to comment, "I can see that. That was a seamless transition if I ever saw one, and was very impressive." President Caldwell moves to the edge of his seat as Braden gets on the track. Braden has quickly become President Caldwell's favorite team member. Braden receives the baton, widening the lead for Johnson, who will be up next. Far in the lead, Braden is running against the clock. President Caldwell exclaims, "Look at him go. I never realized our team was so good." Dr. Karakova tells President Caldwell, "At the risk of sounding a little crude, Axel Braden does have a medal that is inscribed, Axel Braden, as kicker-in-chief on the back of it." President Caldwell laughs and replies, "I'd love to see it sometime." Dr. Karakova tells President Caldwell, "I'm sure he'd be very glad to show it to you. The coaches at his high school gave it to him." Braden hands off to Johnson, who has been granted a significant lead. The administrators sit back and relax, watching Johnson run like a machine. After lapping two other teams, Johnson crosses the finish line first and walks back to join his teammates. The relay team celebrates yet another victory, winning by a significant margin. Heading back to the bench, they all know they have taken the gold medal yet again. Provost Layton cannot help but comment, "Those guys are really, really good." It would be quite a shame if they all didn't return next year. Fully expecting to have a boring day, the administrators now have an air of excitement among them. And, losing the verbal chess match going on in the administrator's box, Dean Grimsby cannot wait for the meet to be over. After the men's mile medley relay is over, the call is made for the women's mile medley relay. Kathy, Paula, Erica, and Barbara, in the first heat, head to the starting line. Expected to win this event for the third straight year, the women's mile medley team could easily set a divisional record today. This year, there is no controversy at the starting line. Instead, the controversy and tension are developing among the administrators sitting in the expensive seats. The starter announces, "On your marks," followed by, "Set." The gun is fired, and Paula takes off, letting out her Amazon war cry. Another Amazon war cry is also heard on the track, which is that of Adriana, who is now convinced that the primal scream affords a bit of an advantage out of the blocks. Adriana now wishes she had learned that little secret when she was a freshman. Assuming the lead in her leg, Paula hands off to Kathy, who announces the beginning of her leg with her Amazon war cry. In the administrator's box, President Caldwell mentions to Dr. Karakova, "That's your daughter, Kathy, again. She's really stealing the show today." Dr. Karakova proudly replies, "That's my Kathy. She's become very competitive on the track over the last few years." President Caldwell agrees, saying, "I can definitely see that." Dr. Caldwell then asks, "What year is she in now?" Dr. Karakova replies, "She's a junior." Provost Layton adds, "Kathy's 100-yard dash time pretty much would qualify her for the Olympics. I really hope Kathy chooses to return next year. If she continues on her path and qualifies, it would certainly bring a lot of good publicity to this university." Not wanting to be left out of the conversation, Dean Grimsby asks, "Provost Layton, I'm just curious how you know so much about track and field. Are you a fan?" Perceiving the dean's malice, Provost Layton replies, "Well, let's just say that, until Kathy and Paula arrived on the scene at our university, I held the university's record in the women's 100-yard dash and the 220-yard dash. Those records stood for many years." President Caldwell comments, "I certainly remember those days. Back then, you were my teaching assistant." Attempting to dig himself out of the deep hole he was digging earlier, Dean Grimsby just got a little history lesson. Clearly, President Caldwell and Provost Layton go back a long time. What Dean Grimsby does not know, and will not likely find out anytime soon, is that President Caldwell and Dr. Karakova were roommates in college. Many years ago, Dr. Karakova ran track, and President Caldwell was on the university's swimming team. Back on the track, Kathy widens the lead and hands off to Erica. For her first time in college competition, Erica lets out an Amazon war cry, surprising Kathy and Paula. Erica, now consistently delivering a 440-yard time better than McCutcheon's or Leggett's best performance, has all the confidence in the world. Running an awesome leg, Erica hands off to Barbara. In the lead by a significant margin, Barbara has never been passed by anyone on the track in this race. She is not about to start today. At the end of her last lap, Barbara sprints toward the finish line, knowing that a divisional record is within reach. Taking first place in their heat, the women's mile medley relay team has, in fact, set a new divisional record. Seeing their time on the scoreboard, the relay team lets out an Amazon war cry in unison. The relay team members exchange hugs and head to the team bench as the other heat is getting ready to run. Having a short break from the running events, Eddie walks over to the field area, checking in to throw the discus. Bobby B tells Eddie, "It's about time you showed up." Eddie replies, "I ran around a little to warm up." "So, did you win?" Bobby B smiles and replies, "Do you really have to ask?" Eddie replies, "That good, eh?" Bobby B, whose winning throw was 12 feet beyond the second place winner, has had a great day. Eddie, Bobby B, and Dr. Bonomo, the field coach, catch up on the day's events as Eddie waits to be called for his throw. Dr. Bonomo informs Eddie that the day's best throw is 204 feet, 8 inches. Eddie is quite confident that he can beat that distance. Eddie is called to make his throw and steps up to the discus pad, taking his time. A few of the seasoned discus men, wondering who the new guy is, watch intently. Going into the wind-up and into the spin, Eddie releases the discus, letting out a primal scream announcing to Kathy, who just threw the discus. Soaring through the air, the discus lands slightly beyond the 220-foot mark. The field judges take the measurement. Eddie's throw comes in at 224 feet, 2 inches. Eddie sits around relaxing as he is talking with Bobby B, waiting for his next throw. Eddie is called to make his second attempt. Stepping up to the discus pad, Eddie is now attracting a lot of attention. Eddie goes into his wind-up and releases the discus, along with another primal scream. The discus soars through the air, again landing at just past the 220-foot mark. The field judges take the measurement, which comes in at 224 feet, 9 inches. Convinced that Eddie has the event wrapped up, Dr. Bonomo tells Eddie to call it a day. Eddie heads back to the bench, awaiting the call for his next event. The call for the 220-yard dash could not have come soon enough. Eddie and Mark have been waiting for this event because they have gotten word that Nacho Brooklyn has been going psycho. Wondering what is exactly meant by psycho, Mark has been thinking of ways to use the situation to his advantage. Mark will likely beat Nacho Brooklyn anyway, but any entertainment potential brought to the starting line simply should not go to waste. Eddie, Mark, and Hoffa head to the starting line. As they get closer, they see Nacho Brooklyn pacing back and forth. Nacho Brooklyn, who knows he will have another tough race, is not happy to see Eddie and Mark as they approach. Nacho Brooklyn stares at Mark, prompting Mark to ask, "What's your problem?" Nacho Brooklyn quickly becomes unhinged and exclaims, "What's my problem? I'm on full scholarship because I always win. And I'm not winning. So my scholarship is on the line. That's what's my problem." Mark calmly replies, "Yeah, that would be your problem, all right. I'm glad it's not my problem." Nacho Brooklyn becomes even more unhinged after hearing Mark's comment, not something that is very beneficial right before a race. Mark, Eddie, and Hoffa give each other a fist bump. Making sure Nacho Brooklyn hears his comment, Mark tells Eddie and Hoffa, "We'd better win, or we might lose our scholarships." Eddie remarks, "Yeah, we wouldn't want that to happen." Eddie whispers to Mark, "Amazon war cry at the start." Mark gives Eddie a high five, telling him, "You got it, bro." Eddie then whispers to Hoffa, "Amazon war cry at the start." Hoffa also replies, "You got it," also giving Eddie a high five. Nacho Brooklyn, wondering what Eddie, Mark, and Hoffa are up to, is still pacing back and forth, expending energy that would be better spent during the race. Hoffa seems to be Nacho Brooklyn's number one problem. Hoffa, who took the bronze medal in the 220-yard dash during the indoor track season, is now the third seed. Nacho Brooklyn knows by now that he is not likely to beat Eddie or Mark. Hoffa, who seems to have come out of nowhere, is the one who will likely hand Nacho Brooklyn a fourth-place participation trophy in this race. The starter announces, "On your marks." Nacho Brooklyn looks over at Hoffa, hoping Hoffa is having a bad day. The starter announces, "Set." The gun is fired, and Eddie, Mark, and Hoffa let out a primal scream in unison, completely unexpected by Nacho Brooklyn and the other runners. A few steps out of the blocks, Eddie, Mark, and Hoffa take control of the race. At the halfway mark, Nacho Brooklyn, 2 yards behind Hoffa, is in fourth place. Nacho Brooklyn can still beat Hoffa, and Hoffa knows this. But it is evident that Hoffa is not having a bad day. As they approach the finish line, Nekla Brocklin gains a foot over Hoffa, but loses it again as the end of the race draws near. Eddie and Mark again appear to tie, but the scoreboard tells otherwise. Hoffa takes third place in this heat, and likely in the event. Nekla Brocklin will walk away with another participation trophy, adding to his growing collection of worthless treasures. The scoreboard shows that, this time, Eddie edged out Mark by 3/100ths of a second. If the finish were evaluated by photograph, the race could have been too close to call. Hoffa is glad to be in contention for the bronze medal. Eddie's, Mark's, and Hoffa's times on the scoreboard are a bit discouraging to the runners in the following heats. It is not likely that anyone will beat Hoffa, but Hoffa will certainly have his eyes glued to the scoreboard until all the heats are finished. Back at the bench, Mark scans the stands, looking for anyone that he might know. Mark mentions to Paula, "Wow. The Chucky is back with that gold shit guy. I wonder what they are doing here again." Paula, using her superpowers, replies, "That ain't good. They are definitely up to something." Mark adds, "And look over there near the announcer's booth. There's Mr. Fraser, Mr. Zunday, and Miss Amherst." With a smile coming across her face, Paula replies, "I hope we get to see them after the meet." Mark suggests, "Maybe Mr. Fraser will make Chucky and Gold Shit take a few laps around the track." Paula laughs, telling Mark, "I'd love to see that." As the afternoon draws to a close, the call is made for the final event of the day, the 4x440 relay. 12 teams will compete and, if you ask Braden, the winner has already been decided. The first heat brings the higher-seeded teams, including Eddie, Mark, Braden, and Johnson, who are assigned to lane 1. Looking around, Mark sees Nekla Brocklin and his team in lane 4. In lane 2, a guy wearing number 1022, boasting to his teammates that they are going to win. Eddie recognizes number 1022 as Dwayne Harris, who ran for Central High School years ago. Harris looks over at the university's relay team, suddenly realizing winning might be a bit more difficult than originally thought. Seeing Harris holding the baton, Eddie decides he wants to lead off. Harris knows he has never beaten Eddie and is not likely to begin today. Braden will be the anchor and will likely run against Nekla Brocklin. Mark will take the second leg and Johnson will take the third leg. Johnson recognizes a few runners he ran against last year and tells the rest of the 4x440 relay team that none of the other teams should pose too much of a problem. But the 4x440 relay team already knows this. The lead-off men get behind the blocks, and the starter announces, "On your marks." Harris looks over at Eddie, wondering if he is any better than he was in high school. The starter announces, "Set." Harris must now deliver on his boastful claims. Once the runners are set, the gun is fired, and the lead-off men are out of the blocks. After 100 yards, Eddie is clearly in the lead. Harris quickly realizes that Eddie is much faster now than when he was in high school. Harris, now with a lot of work to do, delivers his best effort. Eddie hands off the baton, and an 8-second lead, to Mark. Continuing to expand the lead, Mark is intent on delivering his best 440-yard run ever. Mark hands off to Johnson, who begins his leg 1 minute and 32 seconds after the race began. Braden gets on the track, dancing and exclaiming, "Here we go. Give me that baton, so I can get it on. Get down with the boogie. I'm gonna win the gold. Everyone else is gonna fold." Nekla Brocklin watches as Braden is announcing well ahead of time the winner of the race. Johnson hands off to Braden, who takes off with a greater intention than to just win the race. On his way to the finish line, Braden passes the last place runner. Having a specific goal, Braden is clearly out to meet it. Braden crosses the finish line, completing the race with a composite time of 2 minutes, 59.82 seconds. The goal of the 4x440 relay team was to break the 3-minute mark and to smash the divisional record. Today, they have accomplished their goal. The goal was set because Eddie is not likely to run with the team next year. Mark, Braden, and Johnson will be on their own. Although Hoffer is an exemplary runner, he is not quite up to the performance level for the 4x400 relay team to break 3 minutes. No one else on the university team, substituting for any of the runners today, could have delivered anything close to today's winning time. McCutcheon, an alternate on the team, did not participate in today's meet. Since McCutcheon's father donates a lot of money to the school, McCutcheon's absence on the track has not gone unnoticed. President Caldwell asks those in his box, "Does anyone know what happened to the McCutcheon kid?" "I haven't seen him run today." Dean Grimsby doesn't really want to answer the question and really wishes the subject was never brought up. The president, however, does not go unanswered. Provost Layton offers, "I believe that particular issue is related to the situation with Kathy and Edward." Dean Grimsby would be the best person to explain that as well. If you would like, please feel free to attend my meeting with the Dean on Monday morning. President Caldwell replies, "I think I might just do that." Dean Grimsby will be doing a lot of mental gymnastics trying to get himself out of this one. But he will surely fail.